Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.
Graham Smith is here for a reason because I'm not going to like this, I don't think, am I?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Fair play to you. Basically, how much is that doggy in the window? My ding-a-ling, Mr. Blobby, Crazy Frog, you know where I'm going with this. Every now and then, out of nowhere, a novelty song rears its ugly head and it tops the chart for weeks and weeks and weeks and more weeks until we're all driven demented. Although most of us are driven to mention the first 5 seconds. Who buys these things anyway? I think it's a boss for all under 5-year-olds, by mothers who think they want them. Anyway, Graham Smith is the veritable novelty song nerd because he doesn't basically get out very much. No, he's a serious researcher who spent years studying these comic songs and he joins me now to share his knowledge. Graham, share the knowledge. The novelty song, is there such a thing that there was a start of an idea for that, or did it just obviously kind of happen? How far back did they go as far as you're concerned with your brilliant research?
With my brilliant research? I think it's probably the late 1800s is when the novelty record was coined as a term. And it's defined as a comical or nonsensical song performed principally for its comical effect.
Yeah.
And the first known novelty songs were penned by the Tin Pan Alley area of New York, yeah, which was this collection of buildings where music songwriters and publishers, they gathered together. And it's called Tin Pan Alley because when punters were walking by, they heard the dissonance of a load of pianos clanging together.
Oh yeah.
And hence the tin pan smashing.
And of course, some of the greatest music came from Tin Pan Alley as well, but we're not talking about the greatest music here. Can we go to the Roaring Twenties, Bananas? Can we start somewhere? Yeah.
Yeah, Billy Jones and his number one hit for 5 weeks in 1923, which was Yes, We Have No Bananas.
Yes, We Have No Bananas. Okay, we'll go for it. This is the good thing about all this here. I'm only playing clips of these songs. I'm not playing the full thing.
Just guesses you to death, and as he takes your dough, he tells you, yes, we have a no bananas. We have a no bananas.
Can I ask, is the song about something, or is it that a stupid question? Does it have a thing? No.
So Frank Silver, who's one of the co-writers on the track, he played with an orchestra, and when he was traveling to a Long Island hotel for his weekly gig, he used to stop by a fruit stand which is owned by a Greek man, and he'd say, "Can I have a banana?" And the Greek man he'd always answer, "Yes, we have no bananas." So your man thought he was getting his banana. Because the Greek guy said yes at the start of every sentence.
Right, and thus the novelty song was born by the sound of it. Okay, give us some more and let's keep going forward. I mean, that's early 20s. Where are you going next?
So 1928, Helen Cain.
Oh, for God's sake, we're still 100 years ago. Okay, so what? Helen Cain, what did she do?
She sang I Want to Be Loved by You, which was made famous by Betty Boop, who was the cartoon character.
Oh, yeah.
Who was modelled actually after Helen Cain herself. And then it was also sang by Marilyn Monroe in 1959 in Some Like It Hot.
That's right, indeed. Yeah, what was her name? Sugar Cain or whatever it was.
That's some, it.
Something like that, yeah. Okay, so like, you know, what about, get through to the 30s or 40s. Where do you go with that?
So we're going to go up to the doggy in the window, your favourite one, Dave.
How much is that doggy in the window? Are you going to go that far already? Yeah, okay, fair enough. Where does that come from?
So Patti Page, she released it in 1952, but it only made number one in 53, but it made number one for 8 weeks.
It was her version, Patti Page, yeah?
It was her version, yeah, that was the big one.
Here, we'll give it a blast.
How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale.
Lovely. Okay, so that was number one for weeks and weeks and weeks, was it, yeah?
Yeah, and apparently Mercury Records was inundated with requests from people for free puppies.
Really? You know, there was a mention of one back in the 40s that I wanted to mention. It was Hank Williams, Move It On Over, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was his first ever single.
That's a great song.
Fantastic song.
What's it about?
And it's about a guy who gets kicked out of the house and has to sleep with the dog. But a lot of contemporary musicians at the time said, well, this isn't a novelty song because this happens to us. This is reality. So it's not comedy at all.
Yeah.
So critics and the likes of me and you would have called it, we were saying that.
So we shouldn't be including it necessarily in this list. I'm just thinking because didn't George Thorogood have a great version of that? It is moving on over.
Yeah.
Rocking on over, yeah.
That's it.
Anyway, okay. So you went as far as Patti Page and the doggy in the window. It sold how many millions of copies?
Over 2 million.
And where did it come from? Did it come from any story or anything that we know of?
No, I think it was just one of those random novelty songs, like your man passing the fruit guy.
All right.
Just one of these things. But the American Kennel Club's annual registration spiked by 8% in 1953 after the song was released.
Okay, I'm going to give you a blast of the one you just mentioned. Move It On Over. Look.
Move it on over, old dog, cause a new dog's moving. bend.
You know, if he wasn't talking to a dog, if it was just a little bit different, that wouldn't necessarily be one of these novelty songs we're talking about here. By the way, we are talking novelty songs here with Graham Smith, and we're way back here. Let's get forward a little more. Can we go to the 50s and anything at all? Have you got something from that?
Yeah, I have one from the Coasters called Yakety Yak.
Ah, yeah, well, that's incredibly famous, isn't it?
Exactly, so, yeah.
Yakety Yak. What's that about? It's just about, I don't know, does it have a story to it? Or
well, it's the parents are listing out household chores to a child who we're assuming is a grumpy, moany teenager who responds with yakety yak before the parents retort of don't talk back, as we famously know.
All right, actually, hold on, I still like this, listen.
She warned me once, she warned me twice, but I don't take no one's advice, so scratch it on over.
I'll move it on over.
Shake it on over.
Okay, so Yakety Yak, the Coasters, yeah, that's a pretty famous one. Now, there's one song that resulted in a serious kind of spike in sales for a form of bathing costume for the 1960s. Give us a blast. What could that possibly be?
Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini.
Yeah, that was a bit of a biggie, wasn't it?
That was okay. A huge one for Brian Hyland, and it was at a time when bathing suits were still seen as too risque to be mainstream. But when he released Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, there was a huge takeoff in bikini sales all over the US. So it's been credited as one of the earliest contributors to the acceptance of the bikini in society.
And it was not an island in the kind of somewhere in the Pacific. It was called after that because of some, I shouldn't have started this. There's some sort of, you know, what do you call it? A nuclear, forget it. It doesn't matter. oh my God, we have no bananas. Flashback, my name. Oh, sorry, my nana used to sing that to me when I was small, 40 odd years ago. I've never heard it in years. I thought it was something she made up. No, Susanna, it was something that somebody made an awful lot of money out of, and I wasn't your nana. Anyway, here goes Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny.
It was an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini.
Okay, Brian Hyland, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. That was a big sale. It was sold over a million copies, you're saying? A million copies?
A million copies of that.
Okay, and a lot of bikinis were sold as well. Okay, bring us now into the 60s. Let's see where we go with that.
So this is probably my favourite one of the lot. In 1962, Bobby Pickett, he released his Graveyard Smash, the Monster Mash, Dave.
Oh yeah, every Halloween, yeah. People play that all the time on every radio station.
So
yeah.
It was number one in Halloween, and where it came from was Bobby Pickett was a member of a band called The Cordials, and during shows he used to do a monologue of imitating a horror movie narrator.
Yeah.
And the crowd used to love it, so the band said, let's actually make this into a tune. So he did his monologue over a mashed potato style.
Really? So, my God.
The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds.
A big hit, I presume, as well, was it, yeah?
A huge hit as well. Just before Halloween, it was number one, and I think it's been going in and out of the charts ever since.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I've just been told, Bikini Atoll is a coral reef in the Marshall Islands. Nuclear testing, there you go. Bikini Atoll program was a series of 23 nuclear weapons detonated by the United States between 46 and 58 at 7 test sites on the reef itself, on the sea, in the air, and underwater. Thus, Bikini. Okay, where are we going? We're staying in the 60s, are we? Are we going somewhere else?
We're
going
to go up to the 70s
right,
now,
okay.
Where if you're making a novelty record, it had to be about being naked, apparently.
Oh, right. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was the streaking man or the streaking.
The streak.
It was called The Streak. Oh, yeah. That was huge. It was a big scene. I remember Time magazine had about 10 pages on it, but people streaking all over the place, yeah.
Well, that's where this guy, he got his idea from. He said he woke up one day and streaking was all over the news, all over the papers, all over magazines, and he thought, I have to write a song about this right now. And he did, and it was number one for 3 weeks in May 1974. And apparently in the 70s, there were over 35 songs about streaking.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's the only one I know. You can't name any of the others, can you? No.
I can't name any of the others except one by Chuck Berry called My Ding-a-ling.
Oh, well, actually, there's a thing here. It says a text at 51552. I remember my granddad had a record, My Ding-a-ling. Yeah, the thing is, that was by Chuck Berry. The saddest story of this. Actually, you give me your story and I'll give you the sad part of it. What's your story of My
Ding-a-ling? I'll give the funny story first. Right. So Chuck wrote it about silver bells hanging on a string that his grandmother gave him, which were called his ding-a-ling. But as you go through the song, it's very obvious that you can replace the bells and stick with something else, Dave.
Right, indeed. The funny, like, I mean, Chuck Berry, who kind of was a father for many people of rock and roll and was one of the few black guys in the kind of late 50s of Bobby Socks and Ponytail and, you know, Cruising on the Beach kind of teen America stuff that was actually up there with all the others.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, one of the greats. And his only number one, I think, was My Bleeding Ding-a-ling.
The only one. Johnny Be Good, Roll Over Beethoven, none of them made number one.
Everything, you know. So My Ding-a-ling. This is an example of what you're talking about. Novelty nonsense.
I want to play my ding-a-ling-a-ling.
not what he'd necessarily want to be remembered for.
No, definitely not.
Right. Chuck Berry, My Ding-a-Ling. Okay, where are you going next? Where are we? Was that the 70s? It was, yeah.
That was the 70s, yeah. So we're into the 80s, the glorious 80s.
We are familiar with Davos as the place where the World Economic Forum is held. People, you know, talking about stuff that goes over many people's heads. It's famous, I believe, for the Birdie song.
The Birdie song, yeah. It was composed by an accordion player called Werner Thomas, who's from Davos in Switzerland in the 1950s. But the most commercially successful version was, of course, by The Tweets, which got number two in the UK charts in 1991.
Well, it's just, it is the most annoying piece of horror. Listen. Whoa! This is kind of beer bashing, Bavarian bum slapping kind of nonsense. Oh, God.
Oh. Awful.
God, that is very bad, isn't it?
So it didn't make number one at the time, but it was voted the number one most annoying song of all time.
But I mean, if it made number two or three or whatever, like, who bought it?
Probably you, Dave.
No, but like, I mean, I've always had this thing about there's music for people who don't like music, and that's what we're talking about here. You know, there's music for everybody, basically. Okay, that's pretty bad. Although it's probably not the worst. That's The Tweets, is that what they were called? It was, yeah, in the 80s.
Tweets, yeah. And they still have, they have chicken dance contests, annual contests, the largest of which, 48,000 participants in the largest ever chicken dance contest in 1994, where they just play that song and everyone dances.
Funny thing about all that is, I've always been saying that the worst decade for pop music as such, now, maybe not other music, but pop music, was the 1980s, regardless of how big all those bands were.
Yeah.
And I saw them all last week at the, what do you call it, festival, the Forever Young thing. And they won after the other. It was great fun, but my God. Anyway, the point about it is, I rest my case. Seriously, the Birdie song from The Tweets. Okay, give us the next one. Are we staying in the 80s, are we?
We're staying in the 80s for the moment. So we have Richard Branson's only song that he ever produced.
Really? What's that?
It is a song called Ba Ba Black Sheep by The Singing Sheep.
Ba Ba Black Sheep by The Singing Sheep. I've never even heard. Do I have that here anywhere? I don't even know if I have it. Do I? Oh, I do. It's somewhere. Hold on a second. I've got to try and find all these things here.
Digging in the crates for this one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hold on. I don't know where it is. I can't find it. Okay. I might play it for you. Oh, wait a minute. I do have it. Hold on a second. This is a great live television program. Radio even. Here we go. You're saying that he produced this.
Richard Branson.
And who's it by?
Well, The Singing Sheep is, you'll hear now.
To be honest, that one went over my head. I don't remember it at all. Did it get into the charts at all, or get anywhere, or did it do anything?
It was only number 42 in the charts.
Yeah, we should have known it if it was the 80s. And what's the story behind it?
The only reason Richard Branson actually went into the music production was because his Aunt Claire asked a favour of him. She loved black sheep, Welsh mountain sheep, and she kept them, tended to them. And one day she phoned up Richard and said, my sheep have started singing. And he was thinking, she's gone mad now. They definitely haven't started singing. So he says, well, what have they started singing? And she says, well, Ba Ba Black Sheep, of course. So she says, this is when Richard just started Virgin Records. She said, get a load of sound engineers to come up to Norfolk. And so they did, with a mobile studio. They came up to Norfolk, they recorded her singing Sheep, and then they went back down, made samples of it, put a cheesy 80s drum beat over it, and there we are.
Wow, never heard of that before. So, that's a serious novelty single, all right. And it was a hit, 42 is good enough. Ba Ba Black Sheep by the... Oh, yeah, sorry, who does it say? It says The Singing Sheep, is that it?
The Singing Sheep. Oh, right. It was basically Branson and a load of producers from Virgin Records.
I wonder, did the sheep get paid? Okay, let's stay in the 80s then. Where are we going next after that?
So the last one in the 80s, Weird Al Yankovic, who is...
Oh, he did loads of things. He used to take songs of the day and make them funny.
Exactly, yeah. So his huge one in 84 was Eat It, which was obviously a spoof of Michael Jackson's Beat It. So it was number 12 in the US, but number one in Australia.
Really? It was pretty good, actually. It was a good laugh. And these things have a habit of kind of being a good laugh once, then you don't want to hear them again when they are kind of funny. Okay, here it is. This is Eat It by Weird Al Yankovic. Don't want to argue, I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean off your plate, so eat it. Yes, an awful lot of people used to sort of take the songs of the day and just make a bit of a joke. But he was pretty good, actually, with some of the other ones he did
as
well.
Yeah, and he's still releasing stuff today. So,
is he?
Yeah, right, he's still the test of time.
Good old Weird Al. Okay, from Weird Al Yankovic and Eat It, Michael Jackson. Where are you going? Did you say that's the last one from the 80s?
Yeah? Last one from the 80s, so we're going to go into the 90s now.
Okay, into the 90s. Go ahead.
So in the 70s, to get a novelty hit, you have to write about being nude. But in the 90s, apparently, you had to dress up as an alien to have a novelty number one hit. So first, we're going to start with Mr. Blobby.
Is Mr. Blobby an alien? Was he?
I think he's in it.
No idea. I tell you, there was a brilliant thing of what do you call it, Reservoir Dogs, the brilliant thing on TV of all them walking along really cool at the beginning, kind of Mr. Black, Mr. Green, Mr. Pink, and Mr. Blobby coming in behind. You'd have to see it. Okay, where was I? Okay, well, I try it then. Yeah, just tell me more about it, or can you tell me anything at all about it?
Well, he reached Christmas number one spot in 1993 and he toppled Meatloaf's I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do
Wait a
that
minute, he was number one. This got to number one, did it? Oh, yeah, all these kind of things did eventually.
Christmas number
see,
one.
See, one
yeah.
of the problems with all of this thing, though, even years ago, like the only time you could ever find any music at all on TV was Top of the Pops, and you'd wait for 7:30 every Thursday night. And the problem is, there was about two songs that were good, and the rest were kind of dodgy. But the BBC Radio 1 DJs, who were really superstars at the time presenting Top of the Pops, they all gravitated towards this crap here. They all loved novelty singles. They hated music. Discuss. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go towards this here. Sorry, which song is it? Oh, Mr. Blobby. Yeah, right, okay.
Mr. Blobby.
I can't remember how it goes. It does. There is a tune, is there? Yeah, okay. No idea what they were singing there except the word blobby. I didn't hear anything. What does he do? What does he say? What was Mr.? It was your man with the beard who's...
Noel
Edmonds. Yeah. And have you any idea what Mr. Blobby did or was supposed to be, or was he a regular on his eyes?
He was before my time, so right. I have no
idea. He was right during my time. And I
a big,
no
massive
idea.
Alien who walked around. I don't think he even spoke.
Oh my God, sack him. I've no idea. Okay, that's Mr. Blobby. And who was it kind of by Mr. Blobby? Was it by Mr. Blobby, was it?
Just probably BBC producers.
Right, okay, fair enough. Okay, well, I'm just wondering what I might have said if I went out and bought the single, which I didn't. Like, if it said Mr. Blobby is the name of the song, by, I presume it was Mr. Blobby. I don't know. Anyway, go on, give me another one.
So the next one is the Teletubbies with Say Oh Yeah. Uh-oh. So they were number one in the UK for 2 weeks in December 1997, but they were favourite for Christmas number one, but they were knocked off the top spot by the Spice Girls with Too Much. So a lot of media said that the race for Christmas number one that year was decided by under 10s, because a lot of 7 and 8 year olds would have loved the Spice Girls, and 5 and 6 year olds would have loved Teletubbies.
Ah, right, I see. So the younger ones won. Here goes.
Time for Teletubbies.
Dinky Winky,
Hanky Winky,
Dipsy, La La,
La La,
Ho.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, sure. Why not? It was what it was, I suppose. Yeah. I suppose you're going to have, what's his name? Your man who'll fix it.
Bob the Builder.
Bob the Builder. Your man who'll fix it. Cheap. Have you got him in your list, do you?
I don't, because apparently it's not a novelty song.
That's the. I'm going to get a T-shirt with that. Mr. Blob. Sorry. What's his name again?
Bob the Builder.
Bob the Builder is not a novelty song. That's my T-shirt. Brilliant. Really. Can you explain that, Professor? As to why not?
I think
you've no idea, do you?
Because it was the soundtrack to the show, it has to be taken as a legitimate song.
Wait a minute, was that not a soundtrack to a show? No.
No, that was actually it was sort of a spin-off from it.
Oh, really? Yeah. God, you learn something new every day. Okay, so you don't have Bob the Builder in your repertoire here for today. Okay, fair enough. All right, so that's Teletubbies. Yeah, that's a real good quiz. A real good quiz question. What's the name of the Teletubbies number one single? I wouldn't know. It's called Say A-O. That's what it's actually called.
The BBC actually got it wrong, and they did the national quiz contest the next year, and they asked a question, who was Christmas number one last year, and their answer was Teletubbies, but it was actually Spice Girls.
Wow, they got it wrong. Well, I think the best of all of those was, I forgot it. What do you call it? I'm getting completely whatever now. What do you call the two Irish thingy bobs of the
Jedward.
Two guys? Podge and Raj. No, Jedward. No, Podge and Raj. No, who was Zig and Zag? Thank you, God Almighty. Too early on Saturday morning, but Zig and Zag. I think it was Zig and Zag. They had a brilliant song which they released once. And you know what the actual name of the song was, which I love. The actual song title was "The Christmas Number One." So people would say, "Here it is, the Christmas Number One." Zig and Zag. Well, it probably got to number 40. I have no idea. No doubt they'll be on to me now saying, no, it actually did get to number one eventually. Anyway, go back on that. Where was I? Teletubbies. Sorry, yeah. Well, I'm going by years. That's the only indication I have here. Just, that was about 97, you say, yeah?
Yeah.
And the Spice Girls were in their heyday, and they were, no matter what they did, they got number one. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. What's next? Are you already in the 2000s, yeah?
We're into the final straight now. So into the 2000s, and we're going to start off with, this is absolutely awful, Dave. The Crazy Frog with Axel F.
Crazy Frog. Gosh, I can't find it anywhere here. I don't know where it is. That's a terrible thing. Don't seem to have it. Oh, God, I bet you I do have it somewhere. Do I? Say, oh, there it is. Look, I have it. Oh, God. Okay, right. Whoa. That was bad enough in Beverly Hills Cop. That's another example of how crap the 80s were, because that's from the 80s. No doubt I'll be corrected on that. Wasn't that music, Harold Faltermeyer or something, or Beverly Hills Cop, I think, and now it's put into Crazy Frog for the 2000s. That's just not acceptable.
No, I agree.
Is there any story behind it so I can blame somebody? No.
So the Crazy Frog actually was originally a ringtone. So back in the noughties, when everyone had their new flip phones and they spent about a fiver on a ringtone and then had to take out a mortgage because these guys would charge a tenner a month and you didn't know how to stop it. So you'd end up paying 200 quid for the Crazy Frog on your phone. They decided, well, it's so popular as a ringtone, let's make it a single. So they got an even cheesier remix of the Axel Foley theme tune from Beverly Hills Cop, put it together with this annoying Crazy Frog. They released a single, then they released an album, then they released a second Crazy Frog album.
An album?
And we all bought it.
There are two albums of... Hold on a second now. Speak for yourself. Hold on. There's two albums of Crazy Frog.
Two albums of Crazy Frog.
And did they use old music and just do froggy things over it?
No, a few of them are definitely a lot cheaper than that. I think they thought, we don't have to pay the royalties to have a cheesy 80s song. We can just write terrible drum beats and play the
So a novelty ringtone turns into two albums. Wow, that's unbelievable. I must say, there is one thing. Have you seen, what do you call it, Yesterday, the movie about the Beatles?
Not yet. Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, your man's in it, Ed Sheeran, who, like, frankly, I wouldn't cross the road for his music at all, but I do, there's one funny bit, very funny. He's walking along and his phone rings and his ringtone is his own song, I'm in love with the shape of you, which I thought was pretty cool. It's like Morrissey, you know, wears his own T-shirt all day long. Anyway, where was I? That's not great, really, Crazy Frog. That's about as bad as it gets. Who was that by?
The Crazy Frog.
Oh, Crazy Frog was by Crazy Frog, but did it have a title? Was it called Crazy Frog?
It was called Axel F.
Oh, Axel Foster, that's Beverly. Oh, right, yeah, right, okay. Okay, right. Now, give us something else.
Okay, so into 2010, we have our own homegrown novelty song from the Rubber Bandits. I don't know if they'd appreciate it being called a novelty song, but Horse Outside was...
that was a good song.
That was a great song.
Yeah, okay, let's take a blast of that. Behind the civic drive, a horse outside. Yeah, okay. You're calling it novelty, I suppose it is. Yeah, obviously, fair enough. They didn't make an album of Horse Outside kind of stuff, did they?
They did, yeah.
No, but of that stuff, like exactly like that, was it?
It wasn't exactly like that. Right. It was still comedic, but really good. And they had their prank phone calls and all on that album as well, so it's a fantastic album.
Right, and did it get to the Christmas number one or whatever?
No, it didn't. It was tipped as the favourite for Christmas number one, but it's actually an interesting story. It got knocked off the chart by the X Factor winner Matt Cardle with his very questionable cover of The Climb by Biffy Clyro.
Oh, yeah. Together, that one. Yeah.
That should be a novelty song. Mm. So the Rubber Bandits, their record company, sent out 5,000 physical copies to record stores. They sold out immediately, and then they were supposed to send out another 25,000 copies, but they reached the stores a day after the deadline.
Oh, right. So really they are, in spirit, the Christmas number one.
Yeah.
A word, I should say. Which was what? What year was that? About
2010.
2010, really that long ago. Okay, fair enough. Any more?
So our last one is the most recent novelty song, and it's Big Shaq with Man's Not Hot.
Man's Not Hot.
Man's Not Hot.
Should I know it, yeah?
So it's all about a guy who's in a nightclub and he's too warm to take off his jacket. So it comes from comedian Michael Dapa, who went on Fire in the Booth, which is a BBC Radio 1 Extra programme about aspiring rappers who come in and they freestyle over a beat and hope to become professional rappers after that. But he went in as Roadman Shaq, which was...
Sorry, you lost me 5 minutes ago. Here, I'll give it a blast. The thing goes... Are you telling me, like, the people went out and bought that, yeah?
People went out and bought that. That was number 3 in the UK charts. Mm. And it was a comedian who ended up doing it. He just made up the character to do that Fire in the Boot segment. And then everyone bought it. Everyone wanted to see him live, so...
He's a comedian. I'll be the judge of that. Okay, go back on something else I wanted to mention. Yeah, what about smoke that cigarette?
Yeah, by Tex Williams. So not Hank Williams, but in 1947, Tex had a number one hit with Smoke That Cigarette. And he expresses his disdain for the inventor of the cigarette, but not because of its health concerns. It's more because the occasional smoker would stop doing whatever they're doing and have to go outside to take a cigarette. And Tex found this extremely annoying.
Wow.
Now, I'm a feller with a heart of gold, with the ways of a gentleman, I've been told. The kind of a feller that wouldn't even harm a flea.
Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death,
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hates to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
Who's that to say? Tex Williams. Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. That goes back to the 1940s. All right, listen, Graham, thanks a million for dropping in to give us all of those. Graham Smith, it is. One I didn't play. I mean, seriously, surely this is something. Do you not call this one?
Open Gangnam Style.
Is that not one, though? And what about Agadoo?
Agadoo, yeah, Agadoo. I knew, Dave, you'd want Agadoo. Yeah. Apparently Gangnam Style is serious as well.
It's serious? Yeah. Oh, so you can't call it a novelty?
About the hip culture
in Korea.
Yeah, of course.
Korea. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, know it well. BTS and all that.
That's it.
All right, listen, tell you what, and the one I didn't play there, which is the big one, I'll leave it at this. Graham Finley, Graham Smith, thanks a million for dropping in. Graham, good man yourself. I'm going to play this here, which is pretty much damn famous, even though, as you say yourself, it is a novelty.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.